This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. Hours after Ukraine appealed to its Western allies to send tanks to help its forces defeat Russia, the United States on Thursday announced more than $2.5 billion in military aid, but no tanks. The latest U.S. package of weaponry includes 59 Bradley fighting vehicles and 90 Stryker armed personnel carriers. The vehicles come with three types of missiles, tens of thousands of rounds of artillery, and additional HIMARS and other air defense systems. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is to meet with his counterparts Friday at Ramstein Air Base, where more aid is to be announced by other countries. But so far, Germany and the United States are balking at supplying the Leopard 2 and Abrams tanks that Ukraine has requested. In California, visiting California, Northern California on Thursday, U.S. President Joe Biden responded to queries about classified documents that were found in his home in Delaware and in an office in Washington, D.C. He said he's looking forward to getting the matter resolved and says he has no regrets.
What quite frankly bugs me is that we have a serious problem here we're talking about. We're talking about what's going on, and the American people don't quite understand why you don't ask me questions about that.
Russia's Federal Security Service said Thursday it has initiated an espionage case against a U.S. citizen, but it didn't name the person or specify whether they were in custody. Here's State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel responding to those reports on Thursday.
We are aware of these unconfirmed reports that an investigation regarding a U.S. citizen in Russia is taking place, but we continue to try and get as much information as we can.
The charge carries a potential prison term of 10 to 20 years. VOA News. Federal Reserve Board Chairman Jerome Powell is working from home after coming down with the coronavirus. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
The Federal Reserve announced that Board Chairman Jerome Powell has tested positive for COVID-19 and is experiencing mild symptoms. The Fed says Powell is up to date with all his COVID vaccines and boosters. The Fed is in the midst of an aggressive drive to tame high inflation and is expected to raise its benchmark interest rate by at least a quarter point at the next meeting, set for January 31st to February 1st. That timetable could allow Powell to recover in time to participate in person. If not, the alternative plan could be to return to a virtual meeting. Jennifer King, Washington.
A major Indian journalist group has urged the government to reject a proposal to police fake news on social media, saying such a change to the country's information technology rules would be akin to censorship. The proposal would bar social media platforms from hosting any information that the authorities identify as false. It's the latest in a group of measures by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government that are being seen as efforts to rein in big tech firms. The Editors Guild of India, in a statement, urged the government to scrap the proposal and instead begin meaningful consultations with stakeholders on the regulatory framework for digital media. A senior official in the Malaysian government told VOA Thursday that preliminary reports from an ongoing investigation into a deadly landslide in Malaysia that killed 31 people on December 16th indicate the area was not zoned for agricultural, commercial, or recreational uses. Dozens of people were buried as they slept in their tents at Father's Organic Farm in Batang Kali, about 50 kilometers north of Kuala Lumpur, when a landslide swept over the campsite. Greta Thunberg called on the global energy industry and its financiers to end all fossil fuel investments on Thursday at a high-profile meeting in Davos with the head of the International Energy Agency. During a roundtable discussion with Fatih Birol on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum, activists say they had presented a cease-and-desist letter to CEOs calling for a stop to new oil, gas, and coal extraction. The oil and gas industry has said it needs to be part of the energy transition, as fossil fuels will continue to play a major role in the energy mix as the world shifts to a low-carbon economy. And musician David Crosby has died at age 81. He was one of the most influential musicians of the 1960s and 70s. He co-founded the groups The Byrds and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of both groups. From Washington, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, January 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. prepares another massive military package for Ukraine as talks begin over the supply of tanks in Germany.
The reason that we're getting another big package, according to Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Call, because the U.S. is focused on surging Ukrainians with the weaponry that they need for what he's calling the next phase of the conflict.
China's new foreign minister wraps up first tour to Africa with promise of more investments.
For more than three decades, it's been tradition that the top Chinese diplomat's first foreign trip is to Africa. New foreign minister did just that. Beijing, in recent years, has invested heavily on the continent.
And France is hit by massive protests against plans to raise the retirement age. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The U.S. is finalizing a massive package of military aid for Ukraine that American officials say is likely to total as much as $2.6 billion. It's expected to include, for the first time, nearly 100 Stryker combat vehicles and at least 50 Bradley armored vehicles to allow Ukrainian forces to move more quickly and enhance security on the front lines. This as NATO and some allies will discuss the supply of Western tanks to Kyiv in Germany on Friday. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Bob.
The reason that we're getting another big package, according to Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Call, is because the U.S. is focused on surging Ukrainians with the weaponry that they need for what he's calling the next phase of the conflict. And he says the current phase of the conflict is basically the wins and losses are measured in blocks or maybe at most a handful of kilometers. And he says that the U.S. is trying to change this dynamic for the Ukrainians, giving them the weapons that they need for this specific fight now to change it. And he said that the focus is going to be on mechanized weaponry. You saw that with the package that was just announced, the military aid with the Bradley vehicles. Something that could complement that would certainly be more Bradleys or more Strykers. Strykers are a lighter weight mechanized vehicle. With allies that you see across NATO, you've seen the UK providing its Challenger 2 tanks. You've seen the French step up and say that they want to provide their AMX-10s tanks. Call seemed to be pointing that the Pentagon had to make sure that the Ukraine had a well-balanced mechanized and armored weapon system that would be including something from everybody.
Talking about tanks, we understand there's going to be a meeting tomorrow in Ramstein Air Base in Germany. The point of discussion is whether Germany will supply its tanks. There are reports that Germany is looking at the Pentagon to supply tanks before it is willing to commit its own tanks to Ukraine. How is the Pentagon dealing with this?
The Pentagon has made clear that they are going to supply what they feel is needed for Ukraine. They don't kind of play the game of, well, Germany won't supply until we supply it. That's not what the Pentagon is looking for. They're looking for a holistic effort from NATO to make the supplies needed. So we're seeing that with these mechanized vehicles, with these tanks, and potentially other types of mechanized vehicles that you could see in the latest package, like either more Bradleys or like Strykers, which are a little bit lighter weight than the Bradleys, and so a little bit more flexible, so could complement the Bradleys really well. And another thing that the officials are telling me that they're stressing and that they need to continue are the air defenses for the Ukrainian forces. Specifically, that's why we saw the Patriot missile battery being deployed to be trained on, and then will soon go to Ukraine from not only the U.S., but Germany has also decided to send a Patriot. But one thing that will not be included, according to Dr. Call's comments, from what I can suppose, is these longer-ranged surface-to-surface missiles.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. China's new foreign minister, Qin Gang, wrapped up his first tour to Africa this week, during which he visited five countries. He stressed that China does not see the continent as the arena for a new power struggle between the West and Beijing. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
For more than three decades, it's been tradition that the top Chinese diplomat's first foreign trip is to Africa. New foreign minister Qin Gang did just that. Beijing, in recent years, has invested heavily in infrastructure projects on the continent through its Belt and Road Initiative. Some analysts say the U.S. is now playing catch-up with China in its dealings with Africa. In December, U.S. President Joe Biden hosted a summit of African leaders in Washington. China does not see itself in competition with the U.S. in Africa, said Chin while visiting Ethiopia.
What Africa needs is solidarity and cooperation, not confrontation. No person or country is allowed to force African countries or African people to take sides.
While in Ethiopia, Chin inaugurated the new $80 million Africa Center for Disease Control, built as China's gift. The opening of the Africa CDC was a diplomatic win for China, says Paul Nachulia of the Africa Center for Strategic Studies.
Chin Gang's visit sought to send across certain strategic messages. The first being that the relationship between China and Africa is stable, it's multifaceted, and it's well anchored.
Chin had reportedly agreed to forgive an undisclosed amount of Ethiopia's debt and pledged aid for reconstruction in the northern region of Tigray following the end of a two-year civil war. The chairman of the African Union Commission urged China to support the regional body in its quest for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. From Ethiopia, Chin traveled to Benin and Gabon, which analysts say was in keeping with China's goal of expanding the Belt and Road Initiative into Francophone West Africa. He stopped in Angola, a key security partner, and then traveled to Egypt, strategically important to China because of its numerous investments there, including in the new administrative capital being built outside Cairo and the Suez Canal. Chin held meetings not only with Egyptian government officials, but with the Arab League, expressing his desire for an end to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Analysts say Chin may be a different kind of foreign minister than his predecessors. As Chin departed Africa, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen arrived for a three-nation visit to the continent, signaling the importance of Africa in geopolitics. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Kate. As the coronavirus pandemic enters its fourth year, the United States is grappling with a new subvariant of COVID-19 called XBB.1.5, and China is reporting a spike in cases following the dismantling of its zero-COVID policy. VOA's Laura Bowman reports.
It's been 3 years since the coronavirus emerged from Wuhan, China, spread across the globe, and then evolved through many mutations and variants. Despite decent herd immunity and strong vaccination rates in the U.S., a highly contagious subvariant, XBB.1.5, is keeping medical researchers alert. Dr. David Dowdy is an epidemiologist with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health.
It's part of the Omicron larger family, but it is one that has really taken hold here in the U.S. and is now estimated to cause about 40% of all of COVID-19 cases in the country right now.
Americans have seen sicknesses rise during winter months, with the combination of flu, respiratory illnesses like RSV, and the coronavirus sometimes overwhelming hospital systems. Experts think that flu and RSV infections have already peaked and the coronavirus is milder than past variants, but they warn that people and healthcare systems must keep vigilant. Dr. Tom Frieden heads Resolve to Save Lives.
The bottom line is that COVID is here to stay. Healthcare systems need to be more resilient, need to address staffing challenges in nursing and other areas. People need to get vaccinated against flu and COVID. People who are concerned or at risk or when there's a lot of spread need to consider masking up in certain indoor places. So this is the new normal.
In China, though, it's a different story. The government is just beginning to report high numbers of COVID-19 deaths following a relaxation of its zero COVID policy, which put huge restraints on people's movement. Dr. Robert Wachter chairs the Department of Medicine at the University of California at San Francisco.
So you have a population that mostly hasn't been exposed to COVID before, and therefore very few people have immunity from infection. Have either not been vaccinated or have had a vaccine that doesn't work very well and are now being allowed to go and roam free without the restrictions that they've had for the last couple of years. And that is a very incendiary combination of factors.
China's loosening policies are now coming more in line with the rest of the world, where there's a growing view that COVID-19 will be managed along with seasonal illnesses. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
France was hit by a massive walkout and protest Thursday against a government plan to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. The plan is shaping up as a test for French President Emmanuel Macron and for the labor unions that oppose it. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Thousands of protesters had gathered at Paris's iconic Place de la République by mid-afternoon, and they just kept coming.
It's not a fair law that they want, that the government wants to do.
Virginia is in her 50s and works for a cosmetic company. Like most French, polls show, she's against the government's pension reform plans that would boost the retirement age by 2 years to 64. Critics say it will unfairly punish those who have worked since a young age, often in blue-collar jobs.
It is not fair because it's, I think the stronger that are the winner, and those people who works all their life and who works in difficult situations, they will pay for that.
Some 200 major protests were taking place across the country, with the largest here in Paris. Countrywide, flights, trains, and metro routes were shut down or disrupted. Many schools were shuttered because teachers, like many other French workers, were on strike. Middle school English teacher Hortense joined colleagues in Paris to march against the pension reform.
We think that with this kind of law, we're going to be too old to teach students. Like, for me, I will be in retraite when I will be 68 or 67.
President Emmanuel Macron and his government say the reforms are vital to prevent the pension system from going bankrupt as more and more people retire and live longer. Unions and other critics say there's no immediate problem and that there are other ways to balance the books besides making French citizens work longer. Previous French governments, including Macron's, have tried but failed to reform the pension system. France's retirement age is among the lowest in Europe. French lawmakers will begin examining this latest pension reform legislation next month. Unions warn of more protests to come, including this Saturday. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In other news, thousands of Peruvians, many of the country's southern mining regions, descended on the capital Lima on Thursday for a major planned march against the government and Congress, fired up by over 50 deaths linked to protests since last month. In buses and on foot, thousands have journeyed to the capital carrying flags and banners criticizing the government and police for deadly clashes in the southern city of Ayacucho and Juliaca, many demanding that President Dina Boluarte step down. The clashes mark the worst violence Peru has seen in over 20 years. This as many people in poorer rural regions vent their anger at the Lima political elite over inequality and rising prices, testing the copper-rich Andean nation's democratic institutions. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. New questions have been raised over an ongoing investigation into a deadly landslide in Malaysia in December that killed 31 people at a farm and campsite. David Grunenbaum in Putrajaya has the story.
Malaysia's Natural Resources, Environment and Climate Change Minister Nik Nazmi Nik Ahmad told VOA Thursday that preliminary reports from the ongoing investigation seem to indicate that the farm and campsite where 31 people perished was on land that was not supposed to be developed as a farm or used for camping.
From the initial reports that we got with regards to the data from the Department of Environment, it seems to suggest so, but to make final comments, I have to wait for the full report to be out.
Dozens of people were buried as they slept in their tents at Father's Organic Farm in Batang Kali, a popular recreation area about 50 kilometers north of Malaysia's largest city, Kuala Lumpur. The tragedy shook the country and has led to renewed calls for increased safety and accountability. Three Ministry of Natural Resources, Environment and Climate Change agencies are investigating, and Nik Nazmi says he expects the full report to be completed this month but there are nuances.
However, there are a few gray areas, you know, because it's a campsite. So I think that is the big question.
Several days after the landslide, a Selangor state official said the state does not have a licensing-specific process for campsites, but new regulations are coming. During the past month, VOA has made multiple requests for an interview to the operators of Father's Organic Farm, but has not received a response. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News in Putrajaya, Malaysia.
Ethiopia's tourism authority said the industry lost $2 billion during the past 2 years because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in the Tigray region. With the November peace deal moving forward, the Minister of Tourism is ramping up efforts to revive tourism. Ethiopia's Epiphany Festival, known as Timkat in Amharic, is expected to attract thousands of Christians this week. Maya Masikeo reports from Addis Ababa.
Priests start their hymns early on the day of the Timkat celebration that takes place every year on January 18 and 19. This year's holiday is the first since a peace accord that ended a two-year war in northern Ethiopia. The November peace deal between the Ethiopian federal government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front has brought a sense of security for tourists. Rhoda Berger and her friend Fatima Arnos are taking part in today's Timkat celebrations in Jan Meda. The two friends traveled from France and Germany.
I'm half Ethiopian, half German, so I've been in Ethiopia before. Last time was 2020, so 3 years ago. I was actually trying to come last year, but then I decided not to because of the conflict and COVID as well. But then, yeah, I really wanted to. I missed it a lot because I have family here, friends here, so I really wanted to come back, and I was just waiting until the situation got a bit better.
Her friend Fatima is in Ethiopia for the first time.
So when I read, like, newspapers, when I was talking to people and everything, everybody tells me, yeah, you have to be careful, etc. But I guess it's everywhere the same situation, and I wanted to visit the country, and that's why I'm here.
This could mean that things could start looking up for people working in the industry. Henok Abebe, who has worked as a tour guide for over 10 years in the city of Gondar, the epicenter of Timkat celebrations, saw work opportunities dwindle to nothing in the past 3 years. He says, once the war started, it got worse. Unfortunately, our guests are mostly from Western Europe, and there were a lot of restrictions, including travel bans and advisories from their own embassies. He says it really impacted and hurt our business. It was a difficult time for us. During this time, Henok and his fellow tour guides turned to local tourists. But at one point, when Tigrayan fighters had entered the Amhara region, Henok left to join the fighting. He says, we were facing an attack here in Amhara region by Tigray fighters in Gondar. I went to fight in the war. I went to the front, he says, and was also a soldier in the end. Ethiopia suffered heavy financial losses from the disruption to tourism, according to State Minister for Tourism, Silashi Girma. He says, because of the impacts of the war and COVID-19, over $1 or $2 billion have been lost in revenue as a country. He says, when we look at tourist numbers, we should have seen more than 2 or 3 million tourists come to visit and take part in conferences, exhibitions, and other events. With the peace deal holding, the ministry is working on revamping the battered industry. This includes reinstating flights to Tigray region cities and opening up historic destinations like the Amhara town of Lalibela. Officials are also looking for more sources for tourism, such as countries in Africa and the Middle East. Maya Misikar for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study led by the Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar and Marine Research in Germany brought disturbing news to those concerned with climate change and its effects. The study, published in the journal Nature, shows temperatures between 2001 and 2011 at the higher elevations of the north-central region of Greenland were the warmest in 1,000 years. Temperatures there over that decade were 1.5 degrees Celsius warmer than it was in the 20th century. Study authors used a set of ice cores to recreate the temperatures and melting rates of that region's ice sheet between the years of 1000 and 2011. Greenland's melting ice sheet is raising sea levels, and according to the National Snow and Ice Data Center, if it were to melt entirely, sea levels would rise about 7.4 meters. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. Rogue Russia and Maximum Xi. Those are just two of the top 10 global risks that chairman of the Eurasia Group, Cliff Kupchin, warns about in 2023. Besides Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine and Beijing's authoritarian grip, Kupchin cautions about the growing gap between the haves and have-nots, which disproportionately affects women and girls. The top 10 global risks in 2023, this Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the discovery of classified documents at President Biden's old office and his Delaware home, have thrust Attorney General Merrick Garland back into a situation none of his predecessors have encountered. We'll have this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Ruafo in Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Turkey identified four individuals and two entities as part of a financial facilitation network that helps to finance the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS terrorist group. They have been instrumental in the group's recruitment, as well as financial transfers to and from Iraq and Syria. On January 5th, the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated the founder of the network, Abd al-Hamid Salim Ibrahim Ismail Brukan al-Qutuni, his sons Muhammad Abd al-Hamid and Umar Abd al-Hamid, and Loue Jassim Hamadi al-Jabouri, pursuant to Executive Order 13224, for providing financial support to the terrorist group. At the same time, Turkish authorities froze their assets. Abd al-Hamid Salim Ibrahim Ismail Brukan al-Qutuni is an Iraqi national illegally living in Turkey. Over the past several years, he has served as the head of foreign financing in ISIS's so-called Wilayat al-Jazira in Iraq, managed the group's financial facilitation network in Turkey, and played a significant role in transferring funds through his network in support of ISIS and ISIS senior leaders. Muhammad Abd al-Hamid Salim Brukan al-Qutuni and Umar Abd al-Hamid Salim Brukan al-Qutuni are Brukan al-Qutuni's sons. They are members of ISIS's financial facilitation network. In June 2021, they coordinated with an ISIS finance official to facilitate the transfer of over $500,000. Loue Jassim Hamadi al-Jabouri is an ISIS financial facilitator who used Sham Express, a Turkey-based company founded in 2020 by Brukan al-Qutuni, to transfer money on behalf of ISIS between Turkey, Syria, and Iraq. Since these individuals facilitated money transfers to ISIS through their Turkey-based financial entities, Wadi al-Rafidain for Foodstuffs and Sham Express, both of these entities were also designated. Wadi al-Rafidain is designated for being controlled by Brukan al-Qutuni. Sham Express, which exists to illegally transfer money between Turkey, Syria, and Iraq on behalf of ISIS financial facilitators, is being designated for having materially assisted ISIS. The January 5th action reaffirms Treasury's commitment to degrade ISIS's ability to operate globally, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian E. Nelson. These designations and accompanying asset freezes are a result of close coordination and collaboration with our Turkish partners to target ISIS activity in the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.